WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
License to Kill, James Bond says goodbye at last to the spoofy, campy 60s zeitgeist that gave him birth. This movie is entertaining, but not with a wink and a nudge. It's a suspense thriller, a little grim and a little scary. And it's not about gadgets, pop culture, and fun babes painted gold. Oh, the movie has its jokes. It indulges in the usual smirky puns, and Wayne Newton is even on hand as a felonious TV evangelist. But there's a new solemnity in the air. In License to Kill, Bond isn't battling some hilarious feline-stroking villain who's out to control the solar system. His enemy is a drug baron named Sanchez, played with steely grace by Robert Davi. When Sanchez mutilates Bond's CIA pal, Felix Leiter, and kills Leiter's new bride, Bond goes on the warpath. And even Her Majesty's Secret Service isn't willing to back him up.
This private vendetta of yours could easily compromise Her Majesty's government. You have an assignment, and I expect you to carry it out objectively and professionally.
Then you have my resignation, sir.
We're not a country club, 007. Effective immediately. Your license to kill is revoked.
When Ian Fleming first invented Bond, the world still believed in superheroes. But by the time 007 reached the screen in the early 60s, that view was changing. The Bond portrayed by Sean Connery was born not so much into a Fleming world as a sadder but wiser John le Carré world, a post-Kennedy assassination world in which things were seldom what they seemed. Conspiracies lurked everywhere, and men who presented a heroic face might be anything but underneath. Bond could survive in such an atmosphere only with a bit of a smirk, and Connery's Bond grew more and more self-parodic as the series wore on. When it was Roger Moore's turn to don the mantle, the movies became downright spoofy. After all, Moore was soft and pouchy, and his British superciliousness seemed more appropriate in the drawing room than on the fields of action. But in the best of the 70s Bond movies, The Spy Who Loved Me, that was perfectly all right. We weren't able to take Bond seriously again, not yet. License to Kill, though, finds us ready. Perhaps we've discovered we can't quite live with the notion that there are no heroes. But we also don't believe that heroes are born from the head of Zeus. No, this is the summer of Batman, the Dark Knight. We've come to recognize that if you scratch a hero, you may find someone who has suffered. Someone whom life has dealt a raw deal. Someone whose heroism has emerged from a kind of Nietzschean forge of pain and woe. That's the brand of sorrowing power Timothy Dalton exudes. He's fighting a drug kingpin, a real villain. And his weapons are not just Q's crazy gimmicks, but also a reservoir of psychological understanding that he's come by the hard way. Even in his ludicrous romance with Bond Girl A, badly played by Talisa Soto, and his unexpectedly convincing one with Bond Girl B, quite well played by Kerry Lowell, there's an air of something pained and unyielding in Dalton. He isn't the sexual opportunist of yore. If his portrayal hasn't quite come into focus yet, this is nevertheless the first time in more than a decade that one felt James Bond could be a full-fledged character, not just a walking license to kill.